Let's have an AA meeting. My name is Megan and I'm an alcoholic.
Megan.
Welcome to the Monday Night Blue Chip Speakers Meeting at the NABA Club, where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more sobriety tells his or her story. This reading is based on a passage from page 29 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Each individual in our personal stories describes in their own language from their own point of view the way they establish their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and a clear-cut idea of what has happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight and listening later at aabluechipspeakers.org desperately in need will hear our speaker, and we believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them too. I must have this thing. Now I'd like to introduce Alan S.
Hey, everybody. My name is Alan Siegel. I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic. Okay. Just to qualify myself, my AA birthday is October 17th, 1989. So if people can't add it, that's 33 and a half years. Right at 33 and a half years. If it's not a big deal to anybody else, it's a big deal to me, okay? Because I remember sitting in those seats like you are as a newcomer at this meeting. And I was telling Tim before, there was an old telephone, pay telephone out by the front door. And I used to have my mother, his mother, okay, his mother, drop me off till I was going to an AA meeting, and I'd go use the phone to call the dope man, okay? Then I'd come in and sit back there when that thing was closed, and I would nod out and drool, okay? And then at the end of the meeting, they used to come and hug me, tell me they loved me to keep coming back. I didn't know what the hell they were talking about. But, you know, so that qualified a little bit about me. Now, I'm a native Atlantan, grew up not far from here, I mean, probably 10 minutes, okay, and I qualified as an alcoholic as a child, as a baby, okay, and the reason why I know that, he's a baby brother, okay, we have three siblings, and my father used to tell me we had one of each. Well, I'm the oldest, and my sister's the middle. So, we haven't figured it out yet. But anyway, how I know I qualified, because my mother, when I used to bring friends over through high school and then college, she would tell the story, and he can verify it. She didn't get up. It was the biggest. She saved every one of my report cards. Every one. From pre-K to my junior year in college, and you tell people, look, Alan never failed anything except for one subject. I don't know if y'all remember what report cards were, but I turned 74 today. Today's my birthday. Actually, thank you. Next Sunday. But the big deal was she would talk about the report card, and she said, and she would turn over on the back page of the report card, and it was, Alan can't be quiet. Alan can't sit still. Alan can't keep his hands to himself. Well, way back then, I guess they never knew and could diagnose ADD or ADHD. So I was untreated, okay? So I came with my daughter who just turned 27 in December. When she had her little problems and went to Peachford, and she's doing great. It wasn't drugs or alcohol, but it was for other reasons. Anyway, she used to go, and I took her to a therapist, and I used to say, well, and the therapist says, you have ADD. You need to be treated. I want to give you medication. I said, no, I don't need any more medication. I don't want any more medication. And she said, Dad, how do you know? I said, well, during college, you know, I used to do amphetamines to study. And I could read and study, remember everything I did. But other than that, I can read my daily reflection, which I read today. And I usually do not remember what I read. The only reason why I remember today is on my birthday, I've had the same book signed by my sponsor. I've buried three sponsors that I met here in these new rooms in Napa, my home group's Thursday night men's meeting, that the daily reflection today is, and it starts, no, K-N-O-W, no God, no God. And then it ends, no God, no God, N-O, God, no God. And that's truly, till I found God, and whether I thought it was a tree or a sponsor or whatever, the rooms, whatever, I truly could not get some. I picked my first white chip up in the early 1970s. Like I said, I didn't get sober till 89. Okay, but you know, but that was the whole deal. You could add the, from 72 to 89, you could add the days up, and I probably didn't have 2 months total in that period. Till a dear friend of ours who's no longer here that introduced me to NABA came over, and it was October 17th, 89, so I'll tell you what that date means to me besides the day that I had this enlightenment, okay, the burning bush, is I was sitting watching at my mother's house by myself, stoned, doped out, and it was the World Series. It was between Oakland and I think San Francisco. It was the bridge. It came down, and I was watching TV, and the screen went blank, and I literally thought I'd lost my mind in the sky. And John walked into my house and said, "What's going on?" I said, "Hey, you need to take me into treatment. I've lost my mind." And that's really was a moment of clarity. It was God doing for me what I couldn't do for myself, because I literally did not understand. I really thought I was losing it. And I went into Old Decatur Hospital, which is no longer, but I went in there, and they put me through the questions, and I actually volunteered to, please, when I finish my detox, I want a 30-day outpatient or inpatient. And they thought I was crazy, because they said no one ever asked that. They fight you. Well, I said, I've been trying this for 17 years, and it didn't work, and I don't know why I did. And really, truly, from that day on, I have not had a desire for a drink or a drug. And let me tell you what. Alcohol, we talk about, I did everything, okay? And alcohol was my drug of choice. It was the first drug I ever did. So if we all say we're addicts, I'm an addict. My first sponsor here, Emmett, who was in charge of downstairs and got me downstairs before you'd have 30 days, would sign me to go have breakfast in the morning because I had nowhere else to go, came and gave me my first white chip, and he introduced himself. I was a GSR of a CA group. He introduced himself, if you remember, I think you were there, introduced himself as a drug addict. And I looked at him, and Emmett was an old dude. He was my age when I was, 42. And everybody looked at him at CA, he's a drug addict? He says, so happens the drug of choice is alcohol. The oldest man-made drug. No, okay, and it's true. So I don't want to be different than anybody else, because I could not get sober in CA and NA. I got sober in these rooms, AA. It was because that really was my drug of choice, and I could relate, and I didn't want to be around those kind of people that intimidated or I was scared of. So I felt safer in the room, and that's how I got sober, and I've been going to AA meetings since. And I, by the way, I want to thank Tim and Lisa for inviting me. I met Tim about 16 years ago, and I met Tim, and I just saw him down at the Atlanta Man's Workshop, and he happened to be in the same cabinet as my brother, but I met him 16 years ago. I told my story here, Monday Night Blue Chip, and he was just getting sober. So he asked me to please come back, so I told him, listen, I would. Today was a stressful day. I did everything in the world to try to talk myself out of coming here, but I knew I needed to be here, okay? I knew I had to be here. There was no excuse I could make not coming here. I had to be here for myself, and I want to be here for y'all. But it's an honor to be asked to do this. So I see a lot of people I do not know. Usually I come to these rooms, I know everybody, okay? And that's okay. So let me get back to my story. How it was, I was the person that he imitated, okay, wanted to be like, okay, back in the 60s, okay? I was really first dope fiend alcoholic in our family. You know, it was the hippie days, and I ran with Dwayne Allman and Greg Allman and Rod Stewart. He got stoned with Rod Stewart. First time he got stoned, I couldn't find him for 3 days. And I found him between my bed and the wall, okay? At the house. But, you know, I mean, that's how I ran. I ran harder. But back then, it was like drinking. You know, until it got to the point where what it was like funny at first, and it got miserable. And no matter what I tried to make fun happen, it wasn't funny anymore. And I couldn't get out of my own way. And, you know, I resorted to anything. And, you know, my friends, if I could show you my phone today from the birthday greetings, my belly birthday greetings from my friends that I met in AA all over the world and all over the United States, from the men's workshops and family and friends of mine that I've known 65 years that grew up in our neighborhood, they wish me when they 33 and a half years ago, they wouldn't let me near their house. They locked the burglar bars, the alarm. They go, Alan's in the neighborhood, lock the house down. Okay, that's how they knew me. Now I can babysit their grandkids. They invite me to parties. They invite me to the house for celebrations, to weddings. It's a whole new game. Okay, it's totally a whole new game. So I ripped and roared, and I can tell you story after story in jail and everything. And my father's best friend was the judge of Fulton County, and his other best friend was sheriff of DeKalb County, and that's the reason why I'm not in federal penitentiary, okay? That's the only reason why, by the grace of God. And, you know, it is true. I mean, that's where I should have been. Like I said, I've buried 3 sponsors from this, and I was honored in it. I was a year sober. He gave me my year chip. He passed away. I was actually asked to be a pallbearer at his funeral with people with 25 and 30 years because he loved me that much. You know, so it was a big deal. This is all through getting sober and being involved and coming back. And I literally will tell you that for the first 10, 12, 14 years, I was at the clubhouse at least 300 days a year, at least. There were 65 days a year that for whether I was on vacation or sick or for some reason, I made a lot of meetings. And I recommend it, but that didn't mean I'm telling you to do it. You have to decide your own path. My path was I needed people. I needed to believe in people. I needed to open up and tell people about me and be honest about it and show up and be called on my BS when there was. And that's the truth. And still today, I have to be accountable to my sponsor and to my my tree, okay? You know, I've got a partner in a business who's a sponsor brother, okay? He's part of our tree. That I met him going to Roanoke to the men's workshop 6 years ago. And we've been friends ever since. And this is how it works. And let me tell you also, I told Lisa before the story, there was a gentleman here that I grew up, I 12-stepped 30 years ago. He lived Claremont right before Buford Highway in an apartment. And I was with a gentleman that got me into these rooms to the first Atlanta men's workshop, John Perkins, who passed away since. Anyway, and I kept hearing him walk above the apartment just all night long, just pacing. And I used to sit down in the parking lot, and my father and we started talking. I knew him. And we played ball against each other. He went to Briarcliff. And we talked, and he had a bad addiction problem, and I 12-stepped him. And we remained good friends for years. And he worked for Verizon. He got transferred to Kentucky first, and I stayed in touch. And then he got transferred to Arkansas. I lost contact with him, okay, about 14 years ago. Up till about 14 years ago, excuse me. And I'll kick it back before that. So in the interim, before I got sober, we'll go back a little bit about my story. I did the geographical change. Have y'all heard about that? Well, it doesn't work. Okay. Why I say that, I did it. In 1982, October 25th, 1982, I decided I was moving to Israel. Okay? So if everybody realizes, May 14th, 1948, Israel became a state. I was born a year, almost to the day after, on the anniversary. So I had this bug up my ass, excuse my language, the first cuss word. I decided, since I didn't get to go to Vietnam, I dodged it, and then I got the lottery and dodged it, and decided, you know, I was going to go to Israel, because my friend Harry was in Israel before that. And he got me, and I decided to go, and I went. My parents said, great. So they bought my ticket, and they actually gave me $200 in a one-way ticket. One-way ticket. So I flew there, and these people were going to pick me up at the airport to live on the kibbutz, which is a commune, okay? I don't know anybody. I fly in. I've got this long beard and a ponytail, and I'm stoned out of my mind. I get on the airplane, and it's an Italian soccer team, and they're drunk as could be, and they're feeding me liquor, and I land at the airport. And it's nothing like I ever imagined. Okay, I get to the airport, and they're pushing these suitcases with their feet through the line to get through security, and they look at me and they ask, and I give them my passport, and they say, and I got $200, okay, and a one-way ticket. Well, they got me in a room. The Mossad has got me in a room interrogating me. They think I'm a terrorist. Okay, true story, they literally had me in this room, and I'm sweating bullets, and I'm detoxing, and they're accusing me, and they're asking, how are you getting here with a one-way ticket and $200? That's a sign of a terrorist. And I'm like, well, I got people coming to pick me. I don't know who they are. They're Americans picking me up to take me where I'm going to go. They stuck around 8 hours, and I finally, they got me. I got, well, they finally let me go. I said, and so I lived in Israel for 5 years. When I was living in Israel, I married a beautiful Israeli woman. I had to become a citizen, and you do that. Uncle Sam comes in, not Uncle Sam, Uncle Yitzhak comes and gets you, you know. They didn't ask me. I was down at, you know, giving me the examinations, and I was in the military. So I did that for 5 years. He came over, came for 2 weeks. 2 years later, I had to chase him home, okay. He was having a good time. So Jigger did change. I didn't do any narcotics. Okay, well, take that back. I drank a bunch of liquor and beer, and they had the best hashish in the world that you could not see, okay? And it was like Cheech and Chong at my house, because my wife that I married was studying 5 days a week in another city and didn't come home till the weekend. So all the Americans that lived where we lived were at my house with a little bathroom window cracked, and it literally looked like Cheech and Chong up in smoke. Okay, so did that for 5 years, and she didn't want to have children. I wanted to have kids. I was in the military. I drove a tank 9 months a year. I drove a tank 3 months a year, a tractor 9 months a year. And it was fun. It was great. best experience I ever had. Wouldn't take $1 million to change it. But she didn't want to have children, and I wasn't willing to stay over there if I didn't have children. And her family loved me, so we decided to get divorced. Almost 5 years to the day I came back, October 26th, five years and a day later, I came back to the States. She had come back and started. We had a business at the corner of Briarcliff and La Vista, auto parts store. He started, and we built it. He got sober a little over a year before I did. He just celebrated 35 years. Okay. My sister thinks she's sober. She doesn't drink, but that's another story. But, you know, she has other illnesses, and I love her to death. And she's a great support system. I would do anything for her, as he would too. But to her, sober, to me, sober is different than not drinking, okay? For all y'all people that want to hear the message, it's not drinking. It's what you do when you're not drinking and after and keep doing it. Now, the last 4 or 5 years, I went to work, and I worked in the automotive industry, and it's wearing me out, okay? And I did that really in the exotic car business, and then 5 years ago in March, I moved to a place in Tucker, and this is like doing service work, like I'm doing tonight, okay? And like I'm taught through AA, is I work for a company that manufactures wheelchair accessible vans, okay? And let me tell you something. Gratitude is not the word you get when you help a family and family and their kids that needed a van to get their child to school or to a doctor's appointment or their husband out of the house before the pandemic, and even worse, during the pandemic, how terrible it was, and the stories you hear. And there's also nightmares, too. I mean, I literally cry when you hear some of the stories when they lose, after they just buy a van, and 3 weeks later, their loved one dies. It breaks your heart. But in the long run, they tell me, it was the best 3 weeks he ever had. He got out of the house. So you get so much pleasure, okay? So you know what it was like. I ran through Atlanta. I ran through Israel, okay? I came back here. It didn't get any better because I used to go from the house. Our house was between, there was a place called T.J. Haley's at Sage Hill. True story. I used to drink there and drug there every night. And the store, it was right between the store and our house, okay? So I came home, and the first thing my mother said to me, I love her to death, and happy Mother's Day, and she's been gone 22 years, December 24th. She said, don't you need to start back to those meetings? I said, no, I'm fine. So I was just smoking dope and drinking a little bit in Israel, okay? So I was okay. So I used to go to work from the house, pass, and then I'd go home and I'd pass P.J. Haley's. So after 5 years and a couple of weeks, I decided I'm going to stop there and have a drink. Okay, so I stopped for it. I want you to know, 5 years, my seat was still empty, and I sat down in that seat, and the manager said, Alan, how you doing? You still want to... Your 101 Wild Turkey, he didn't even know I was gone 5 years, okay? He had no clue. It was like Cheers, you know? It was literally like he had no clue I was gone. So that one drink, went home. Next day, one drink, went home. Next day, two drinks, went home. Fourth day, man, it was drinking cocaine, heroin, and everything else. And then that was in October of 87. So it took me 2 years to October of 89 that I had enough. And I got bought when the World Series happened and I went blank. I went into treatment. So I tore through two countries. And the true story is that when I met Ted, and I met the gentleman how I met Ted, the guy that I 12-step, I started telling the story, is he was very involved and I lost contact. He moved to Athens, which I didn't know at the time. He lived right over here off of Ballista Road in Claremont. And he went to Israel. I didn't know at the time. And I've been a guy here that I helped move and talked him into moving to Israel. That Lisa knows, I think Tim met him, moved to Israel. And Ted went to an AA meeting in Tel Aviv. This is how the small world works when you start getting connected and going to meetings and workshops and stuff, and you make connections and you stay plugged in, okay, which is important. Ted went to a meeting in Tel Aviv in a bomb shelter, because that's where all the meetings are, okay, a lot of stuff, you know. And they said, where are you from? He goes, oh, well, yeah, well, I'm from Atlanta. And Glenn went up to him and said, I'm from Atlanta too. And he says, Glenn said to Ted, do you know Alan Siegel? Ted says, Alan Siegel 12-stepped me and I'm off contact. Glenn says, I have his name and number. So he gave him my number. And 14 years ago, he called me. And I normally don't answer a number that a name connected to it. And somehow I did, which was a God thing. I answered. And he says, Alan, this is Ted. I said, Ted, I've lost contact. I've been looking for you for years. He says, well, I went from Kentucky to Arkansas, then I moved to Athens. And I'm involved in this, and we go once a year to Israel. And I went to this AA meeting in Tel Aviv, and I met a guy that knew you, and I got your number. Okay? So it happens. Even on my honeymoon, which was a honeymoon from hell, that's another story, okay? And my anniversary date was April the 1st, okay? So the joke was on me. Okay, but anyway. On my honeymoon, we went to Bermuda. And we have a dear friend that has a restaurant here that trained in Bermuda at the Castle Harbor. And Tony said, go to Castle Harbor, stay at Castle Harbor, and ask for Flavia Lamb. That's her son. They're the head maitre d' and waiter. And they're still there. I haven't been there in 20 years. And sure enough, I called. They were still there, treating me like a king. So I was over there. I was sober. She was sober 6.5 years. And I go, and we're going to, on the little mopeds, and we're mopeding around the island, and we're going to go to the castle in Hamilton. So you have to go in the thing and take the ferry over to Hamilton. We're eating breakfast. We go to this restaurant, I see this guy, and in this room right here, in this room on a Thursday night men's meeting, I saw his back, I said, Sean. And he looked and said, Alan. I said, what are you doing here? He says, I thought he was Irish. He was English. He actually, and it's an English colony. He says, my parents live here, and I moved back here, and they're building a bank, so I'm working as a waiter. And he says, I'd love for you to come to an AA meeting, and you'd be the discussion leader. So, I mean, this is continuing. It will happen if you stick around long enough. If you don't believe me, just try it, okay? Stay around long enough and try it. You'll see it. It'll happen, okay? But, so, these are the things that happen to God, things that keep happening to me over and over and over again. I got divorced, sober. She wasn't. We had a beautiful daughter. It affected her dearly, and she came to me and she checked herself in that, not people, and I said that she wanted to review. She helped herself. She wanted to do herself. She's doing great now. She moved back to Atlanta 2.5 years ago, bought a house, 25 years old, bought her first house. Pretty good for a 25-year-old. I'm impressed anyway. But and she's very involved in Al-Anon. She still has her friends. She still goes to meetings. She stays connected. And that's what I did. I used to take her to Peachford on Wednesday night to Al-Anon. I used to go to the newcomer meeting at Peachford every Wednesday night for a long, long time. Then she moved and went to school in Ohio and got a scholarship, graduated a year early. It was working up in Columbus. Then they let her move back here remotely. She didn't want to move to Florida where her mother was. She wanted to move back to. I actually had custody since she was 10 years old. We went to court. And the judge looked at me. That says a lot about y'all and this place. I mean, not many men go into front of a judge with lawyers and ask for custody of a child, especially a man, and get custody. But I got custody of my 10-year-old child, okay, which is a pretty big deal. She came over yesterday morning with her. I called my grand dog, and they came and they bought me Starbucks and breakfast and spent a couple hours with me, and she called me this morning. His daughter, my niece, called. I mean, I had phone calls from all over wishing me, you know, happy birthday. So we had a successful business. I wound up selling my half to him, and then I started my career over again. We've always been in the car business. I got into the car business, and then I got to exotic cars, which was wonderful. I met every NFL player, every hip, from Ludacris to Missy Elliott to Rich Homie. You know, I've got pictures with D.C. Curry, D'Antonio Wilder. Okay, I mean, that's not to brag. I did it for 5 years, and I bailed. I had enough. The owner of the place became a liar and a thief, and I can't hang around people like that. And I gave my 2-week notice, and I had turned this place where I'm working now. I turned a job 5 years before that down. And for some reason, they called me the day I gave my 2-week notice. And they said, "Will you want to come to work for us?" I said, "You couldn't have picked a better time." So I gave it to, and the guys laughed at me. There was only for 4 of the salesmen. I was there 5 years, and there was there people 10, 12, 14, 17 years. They laughed and said, "You're crazy. You're leaving this kind of." I said, "Yeah, you can stick around, but he never lied to us before, but he's lying, and they laughed." And I want you to know, it's 5 years more since I've been at this place. In the last 2.5 years, every one of them have called, and all have left, 15, 17. He said, "You were right." I said, I just could see it on the wall. You know, so and they've all gone their own way. I'm talking about people that were investing a long time there in one place. So it came to fruition, and I was right. I'm very happy where I am. It's just to the point now, I'm getting to the point where I've just got to learn that I want to finish this year. I want to just live life on life's term and do what I need to do for Alan. I've got my daughter grown up. She's got a house. You know, I'm just telling you what it was like when I had nothing. What happened? We had a business successful. I sold it, and then I reestablished myself in a field that I did very well in. To the point now is that my daughter's good, and it's time to just, you know, maybe before the end of the year to call it quits and just, you know, take care of Alan, enjoy Alan Siegel's life, and do what he wants to do for himself. But that's my story, and I'm basically sticking to it. But I didn't want to get into all the stories about all the, you know, all the heavy drug using and drinking and in jail. I mean, I can look at everyone. I'm no different than anyone sitting out there. I put my pants on the same way. I did the same thing. We all say our family. I came from a normal family. Well, I thought I came from a normal family. It's just, you know, what's a normal family? I don't know. I mean, I got a brother in recovery. I got a sister that says she's sober, and she got other problems. I mean, you know, listen, I live one day at a time. People laugh, even though they send me happy birthday. I've kidded for years. When I get up in the morning and I hit my knees and I do my daily reflection every morning, and I kid, I say it to myself. My dad would tell me, when I wake up and I open my eyes up, and I thank God for letting me take another breath and be there at maximum service to my fellow man. Okay? That I say it's my birthday. Every day is my birthday. When I open my eyes up at 74 years old, it is truly my birthday today. It'll be my birthday tomorrow. The next day, it's truly my birthday. Because truly, my friends that we grew up with that are taking me out to dinner this week, that I grew up for 65 years, we've been friends. I moved in the neighborhood when I was 9 years old. They'll tell you, they all bet. My cousin called from North Carolina that grew up with us, and they all bet. They said they would bet that I wouldn't make 30 years old, okay? that's how I ran. I mean, I ran hard and did some crazy things. But my life today is telling, I tell people my story. The time when Tim met me 16 years ago, I told my story. A girl came up and she says, "You're lying." She says, "Nobody like you could have done what you did." But I said, "If you want to call, I can call anybody at any time you want and verify anything I tell you. It's the truth." But I'm not proud of it, but it's the greatest. It's, that is what I draw from. My past is my greatest strength because I know what I used to be like and what I could be like again if I don't take this serious one day at a time. I want to appreciate Tim and Lisa again, Napa, and appreciate my brother coming to show support. And thank you.
Thank you, Alan.
There's a well-known affliction, better known as addiction. Takes everything you got, including your ambition. Has a real long history, but still it's a mystery. It's all you think about becomes your priority. You lose your self-control, you dig yourself a hole. You'll do anything to feed it, even sell your soul. It's a daily obsession, a fatal progression. The way to free yourself is with the true confession. It affects all races, has so many faces. Like power, food, and sex, it's all the same disgraces. It's a sin strike, addiction ruins your life. And the sad thing about it, you won't even think twice. It occupies your mind, it's like you're doing time. Every time you turn around, you're spending every dime. You place your family last, and you set up real fast. It's hard to face reality, therefore you live in the past. It's so much confusion, a life of delusion. You think you're doing fine, but it is just an illusion. It's a life of shame, and leaves you feeling lame. The price for your addiction costs you nothing but pain.
Come out of the darkness, come into the light.
Come on,
walk by faith and not by sight. Come out of the darkness, come into the light. It's time to throw away the needle and put down the pipe. Come out of the darkness, come into the light. Because darkness cannot survive in the light.
There are no rules on the street, so be quick on your feet. Every corner that you turn on telling who you could meet. So many faceless names and nameless faces doing real crazy things and they leave no traces. Now Freddy is dead.
What?
That's what I said. He took the wrong man's money and was shot in the head. There was this girl named Beth, strung out on pills and meth. Addiction took her life to 17 at a death. She had a friend named Jack, he was addicted to crack. He took his very first hit and he never came back. Let's not forget about Paul, he loved that alcohol. He had a head on collision, killed a baby and all. Last night, Chris took Corey's life. When they arrested him, the blood was still on the knife.
Come on,
now both are separated from their kids and wife. One is in the ground, the other's doing life. Corey was stabbed in his heart for his money and dope. Chris was really strung out, and he had lost all hope. I can't believe I killed my friend, that's what he said in the note. The guards found Chris' body hanging from a rope.
Come out of the darkness, come into the light.
Come on,
walk by faith and not by sight. Come out of the darkness, come into the light. It's time to throw away the needle and put down the pipe. Come out of the darkness, come into the light. Because darkness cannot survive in the light.
Drugs are not cool at all, so don't believe all the hype. It was in 1991 when I put down the pipe. You see, I had this affliction, better known as addiction. Took everything I had, including my ambition. I was sick and tired of being sick and tired. Every chance that I got of being sick and wired. I found some people like me, they said they found the key. The information that they gave me helped to set me free. So now I do what I can to help my fellow man. The message that I share is their recovery plan. You see, I once was lost, but today I'm found. Have no desire to get high, my feet are on the ground. If it can happen for me, then it can happen for you. You see, you're really not alone, your life can be brand new. So if you're sick and tired of being sick and tired, every chance that you get of being sick and wired. And if you wanna be free, that is the remedy. You're only 12 steps away from your recovery. The others like yourself, who got themselves some help. And the only way to keep it is to help someone else. No need to suffer no more. See, once you open the door, you'll find everything you need. Need I say more?
Come out of the darkness, come into the light.
Come on,
walk by faith and not by sight. Command the darkness, come into the light. It's time to throw away the needle and put down the pipe. Command the darkness, come into the light. Because darkness cannot survive in the light. Command the darkness, come into the light. Walk by faith.